everybody. It is take 246. It is the Haunted Mansion take. Keeks is in Disney World celebrating his 30th birthday. So happy birthday, Keeks.
Happy birthday.
Today I am joined by my favorite guest. It is Kennedy. Welcome to the pod.
Hi. Thanks for having me in our house. I appreciate it.
In our closet, to be specific, because this is where the good sound is. We need to get a better mic. I keep saying that, but eventually it'll happen. Last time that Kennedy was on was for take 205. That was the Twilight take.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
That's been a long time.
That was one of my favorite takes. That was a good time. And then the first time she was on was for take 78 when we were dating. And I didn't even refer to you as my girlfriend on the pod. Do you remember that?
I was just a guest at the time.
Yeah, you were just a guest. But we were dating.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How coy.
I know. I got called out a little bit. But anyways, we're here. We're back. You've been on a few times. You've been on some Halloween takes. Trick or Sweet or Geese Bumps. I like to refer it as Geese Bumps.
Yeah, those have been fun. It's fun to be here with Becky, so I miss my fellow podcast guest, Becky.
So, oh, yeah, that was... we got to say also, last take, Keeks and Becky, I was dying at, obviously, the feedback from the Films to Be Buried With, and specifically the Saw Patrol.
Oh, my gosh.
That was so funny.
That was hilarious, truly.
So yeah, Saw Patrol, Barbenheimer, I'm all in for Saw Patrol, but I will not see Saw, but I might see Paw Patrol. Okay. Well, anyways, we're going to go through our favorite trailer, some movie news, favorite things we watched. We have some fun things that we've been watching. We're going to talk about some anticipated movies that are coming out, and then we're going to get into the nitty gritty of the Haunted Mansion review. And again, Keeks will be splicing in, some of his Disney World takes and his rides and things like that. So, Kennedy, what has been your favorite trailer / movie news?
Oh, my favorite trailer / movie news. I think that this is something that you had shared with me this week, which was that about Greta Gerwig and the Barbie movie moving into the billions in box office. I'm not sure that I'm even saying that right, but it's very impressive. That movie was fantastic. And it's really exciting to see a film that just I really feel like had, I don't know, that it really could have been easily underestimated, and I think probably was underestimated, performed so well. So that's been something that's been kind of fun to see happen this week. Your other question was a trailer?
Yeah. Do you have a trailer?
Let's see. Well, I mean, I do think that the Killers of the Flower Moon trailer looks... I mean, that movie, I'm so curious. It's very... wow, just the soundtrack alone, is just really emotional. So I'm very curious to see how that film is going to play out. And then, yeah, Dune Part 2 looks really good. Really excited about that coming out.
Let's go. Dune. Yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon, the drums at the beginning.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. They're so powerful. So very curious to know if that theme continues throughout the movie. It hopefully does.
Yeah. I think that's going to be... not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I think it's movie. It's going to be definitely a more difficult watch, but it looks like a very promising, very emotional, very heartfelt story, and really incredible use of soundtrack too to really drive some of those emotional points. At least that's what the trailer's telling me. So hopefully, it's the case.
Marty, yeah, Martin Scorsese. I don't know if this will be his last. It has premiered in some festivals. It's killing it. With people are giving it hundreds, but it is a whopping 3 hours and 26 minutes long.
Goodness. Oh my gosh. I have a lot. I mean, I think a lot of us have some beef with how long movies have been these days. I feel like movies have been more frequently peaking over 3 hours, which has been an incredible, I don't know, new era. I mean, it's not that it's new. Movies have been long for a while, but I feel like more frequently, more box office hits are peaking over 3 hours. And that's a lot to ask of an audience. It's a lot. And I think that it also, I don't know, I'd be curious to know how much that impacts anecdotally, the rewatchability of movies, because I mean, to have like 3 hours in the theater is one thing. Like, you're making that time to go to the theater to have that experience, yeah, and take advantage of the visual and audio quality and like, but at home, like having 3 hours like plus to be able to sit down and watch a film, especially in maybe a family household, that's a lot. So
that's it.
What it does for rewatchability.
You got a clear weekend for that. Like Oppenheimer, got a clear weekend. Lord of the Rings, got a clear weekend. But those are like special watches.
For sure. I think that they are special watches.
What, do you have like a favorite long movie? I feel like a long movie is anything over 2.5 hours. That's where it like gets long for me. It's like when you're passing 2.5 hours, and I've said it before on the pod, like I don't mind a long movie as long as it's like it's gotten its message across. Like it's needed to do, like Interstellar, perfect example. That's like 2 hours and 50 minutes. That movie breezes by. I think Oppenheimer's paced pretty well. So I don't mind long movies as long as it's not Winter Sleep, which was rough. That was one of Keeks and I IMDb watch. That was like 3 hours and like 20 minutes long. And it was in another, it was like in a foreign language, and it was just, it was long. It was boring. That was a slog of a watch. Anyways, yeah.
I think that I think you're hitting on that pacing is so crucial for, yeah, any long movie, right? Like a movie that's really paced well does not have to feel like it's over 3 hours or 2.5 hours. I think that that's really a big ask of the director, of like the, I'm not sure all of the formal titles that would actually have the biggest impact on pacing of a movie, but obviously if it's paced well, then you can kind of really, then usually it's more enjoyable, like, or more enjoyable. But if you're going over 3 hours, you're really pushing the limit, and you really are walking a very fine line between audiences' attention and where people are going to start to nod off or just lose interest or even start to feel frustrated at the film, because you're like, I have now been here for over 2.5 hours, getting into 3, maybe 3+. And that's a lot to ask of your audience. So I do think that it's a really delicate dance to have to ask your audience to do. So it better be paced well, or else you're getting into territory where people can start to turn on the film.
Yeah. Yeah. The perfect length. What is the perfect length of a movie? If you were to say.
Oh, I don't have like a perfect length. I guess it really all just is going to come back to the pacing of a film. I think that films that are easily more rewatchable are your 90 minutes, are, ooh, your 2 hours, fuck and a half, are your, like, those are movies that usually you're watching multiple times. So I don't think that those mean that they're great films. I think that those are just easy watches.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. Okay. Sweet. Yeah, man. Killers of the Flower Moon. We're going to be talking about that later, 'cause we have some other things. My favorite trailer, I actually really liked Wish. I thought Wish was a cute trailer. The new Disney movie coming out, I liked it. It kind of had like a Moana Frozen vibes to it. I feel like Disney and Pixar has been in a little bit of a rut. Maybe this movie will help them kind of get some momentum back with their animated movies.
Really, what did you like about it? What was so interesting about it to you?
I just like the music. I kind of like the vibe of it. It's like a classic, kind of like good versus evil was kind of what I was getting. So.
That's so interesting.
Because were you anti?
Oh my gosh, because the second that trailer came on the screen, and like, I love Disney, I'm a big fan. It's a different animation style. The animation style is not what we've seen with Frozen or with like Tangled. It's not as bright and as...
Yeah, the colors were a little bit dimmed.
It's like yeah. I don't know what the techno... I feel like I'm just really butchering this, but it is very flat. It's like you're reading a storybook. Like you're looking at like a, not quite 2D, but kind of, like it just felt very much like you were looking through the pages of a storybook. And at first I thought it was going to be DreamWorks, or that it was going to be something not in the Disney franchise.
Yeah.
And then if I'm really being honest, I felt like what they presented in the trailer was very underwhelming. I didn't feel like it was really captivating to me. I do recognize that we were in the theater for the Haunted Mansion. We're seeing a lot of Disney trailers. It's a family theater. It's a family audience. So there probably were a lot of like more excited, like younger, like audience members about that. But like, for me, I felt like it didn't tell me anything about that story. So yeah. I actually am not super, I guess I wasn't as like impressed. So sorry to you to come at you.
I love it. I love a good disagreement on the pod. I like when things are left kind of open in trailers of like, all right, this is the little bit of what we're giving you. That's it. So yeah. The less is more for me when it comes to trailers. Like, I don't need to know the story. I don't need to know the plot. Like, give me some snippets, give me some sequences, catch my interest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody knows how I feel about the whole Spider-Man trailers of past. That basically, gave away, like, action sequences and pivotal moments. So, less is more for me when it comes to trailers.
But I think that that's interesting for a child's film. Like, or, like, I shouldn't say a child's film. It's probably very family-friendly. I mean, it's Disney, so I'm sure it's going to be great. I'm sure it's going to be a good film. But I would assume that, like, in films geared towards younger audiences, you have to be more, like, I don't know that you have to kind of give more because, like, it's a younger audience. They're not necessarily as interpreting it as much. But to me, when does that film come out?
Because, I think it's October. Let me look.
Oh, wow. Because, like, I thought that, like...
let me see.
I thought the reason why there wasn't a lot of content
November 22nd.
I thought the reason why there wasn't a lot of substance in the trailer was because it's, like, not due to come out for, like, a long time. And they're kind of jumping the gun and just giving you, like, hey, like, this film is, like, put it on your radar. But
yeah.
If it's coming out in November, then, I mean, it's obviously a creative and a creative choice and decision. So, but, I mean, not to say that, like, I won't see the film and that I'm thinking it's going to be bad. It just wasn't what was really captivating to me as of lately for trailers.
Yeah. Well... I like it. Nice. Wish. We'll go see it. We'll check it out.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see if it lands. Still haven't seen Elemental. So we'll see about that. That's going to be like a buzzer beater watch for the end of the year. Speaking of trailers, in Haunted Mansion, A Night in Venice came on. Mm-hmm. And there was a family in front of us. And that was actually kind of a spooky trailer for like a Haunted Mansion like family movie. And it was pretty funny. The parents in front of us, we had like a row, like a family, like sitting in a row in front of us. And the parents like leaned over to check on their younger kids after that trailer. Did you catch that?
I did, but I like didn't understand what was really going on until after you mentioned that. Because I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Like why? Because that family was very busy. They kept leaving in the middle of the film.
Yeah.
Like they needed either concessions or several bathroom breaks. Like there was a lot going on with that front row.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wow, there's like a, what movie is this? They're doing like a seance. I was like,
yeah.
Is this like an exorcism? And then it was.
Oh, in the trailer. In the trailer.
Not
the family in the theater.
That would have really been a Haunted Mansion experience.
Yeah.
Is it Night in Venice? A Haunting in Venice. That's it. With Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, and Tina Fey. I was so interested to see Tina Fey.
Where's Tina Fey?
Oh,
there she is.
Yeah, it's been a minute since we've seen her in anything on the big screen, and she is also like really famous for her career in TV and obviously on SNL and like in the comedy world. So this is like a really interesting left turn for Tina Fey, and I love her, so I'm very curious to see if it would be good. It does look spooky. It does look like it's got some good thriller action to it, but I, for whatever reason, also felt like we saw the scariest content in the trailer.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know why. I didn't get the sense that I was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be like a crazy film, like scary, like a lot of jump out moments or anything. I don't know why. I just kind of like felt like maybe we got all we needed from the trailer, but still curious to see how it would be.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It kind of revealed its moments. Less is more. Less is more. Okay, fave thing... we've been watching. I recently watched Stand By Me by Rob Reiner. Loved it. It's basically, comparison here. Maybe a bad comparison. It's a more grounded, very grounded version of the Goonies, where four friends go out to see reportedly a dead body because one of the friends overheard a conversation of his older brother, another friend, that this boy that goes missing with in the town, and then they said they found the dead body. So they go on an adventure. But it's a good, tight, buck and a half watch, good script, good acting, especially by River Phoenix. And, I loved it. So good watch. A/sweet for that. Another thing I've been watching that I have been quite the fan of not way long ago, but like years ago, we're back on the Rick and Morty train and it is so dumb. It is really funny. I forgot how funny the show is. I was watching season 3 live when it was dropping, and then season 4 came out and I watched like the two first episodes, and then I was just like, I'll wait for it all to drop, and now like three seasons have passed, so I'm like way behind. But it's a great like kind of turn off, not really turn off your brain, but like relaxing watch, just 20 minutes.
I was just going to ask, the 20 minute episodes.
Yeah. And they're just like super unfilled. Everybody that's seen Rick and Morty know that it's really dumb, but it's actually like really kind of fun, wacky episodes with some pretty sweet action. So those are my fave things I've been watching lately. What about you?
So after our, we were in Jackson Hole last weekend.
Fave with spot.
My sister, Brooklyn, and her husband, Cade. My sister Brooklyn recommended a TV show from the History Channel that's available on Hulu called The Food That Built America. Oh my goodness, like this has been such a captivating watch. I really love documentaries, really love, for anybody that was like a fan of coming home after school and watching like those true crime reenactment shows.
Gosh.
This is very much, weirdly enough, in that same vein. So the basis of it is that they're actually very long episodes. They're like an hour and a half.
First season's long.
The first season's episodes are like coming in like an hour 20, like hour 30, like ish. And what they do is that they do these reenactments or these dramatizations of these moguls that built the food industry, the modern day food industry in America. So they highlight Milton Hershey. They highlight C.W. Post of like the cereal company, the Kellogg brothers, and their eventual rise to fame in cereal and breakfast foods. They highlight a lot of like early entrepreneurs that are coming out of the 1800s, that are even going through like the what their businesses look like in the wake of like the Great Depression. And then it kind of goes there even more modern times. So it brings us up to speed with like the McDonald's brothers, with how Burger King, or like Instant Burger King to Burger King. But it's
terrible this, name.
It's these reenactments, and then also cut in with like real time food historians and other people that are like published authors or reporters that are talking about like the food that built America. So it's very much a documentary style, but mixed in with these like really, really corny reenactments. But the subject matter is fascinating. Yeah. It is so crazy to hear about how these titans of industry like came up like by just like developing like Heinz ketchup, right? Like an entire wave of new technology was created because of like Heinz and like and creating ketchup. And so it's fascinating to like see like these like histories come through. It's also fascinating to hear like about like some of like the lesser known parts that are not as pretty, right? Like a lot of like corporate espionage, like people stealing each other's recipes.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And like going forward and being able to make profits and like eventually rising to billion-dollar companies because they stole a recipe from somebody. So it's very interesting. I highly recommend it, but it is a long watch. But it's kind of an interesting format because season one is like three episodes.
And those are like hour and a half episodes.
Yeah, very long. And then I think in total there's three seasons or so, maybe just two. But it is very interesting. But it's available on Hulu, but it's through the History.
Four seasons.
Okay, so four seasons available on Hulu, and I highly recommend. And huge shout out to Brooklyn for that recommendation, because it's been really fun.
It's been a good watch, like a light watch. And yeah, the acting when they dramatize it is so bad. It is so over the top. Like there's one segment where the Carney brothers,
yes,
who start Pizza Hut, there's like one sequence where they're like, what should we do? And the guy's like, we should franchise. And he's like walking towards the cashier, and it plays this music, and you're thinking, is this dude going to murder his brother? Like the setup is so, and like there's other just like, they like, I don't know if they were jerks, but like a lot of the bosses and like these guys that are running, you know, these big food industries are all just like jerks. And they're like, yeah, good luck. Good luck starting your own business.
Like, I think that they might be afraid. Like, maybe the actor's contract is based on lines of dialogue, because they try to give the most minimal lines of dialogue for these actors. And they are just insane. Like, they're the most boring and flat dialogue lines.
Oh, yeah.
So the actors are trying to bring so much in their body language and in, like, their mannerisms and in how they're interacting with one another, that it's just like, oh, my gosh. It's so funny. It really is just horrible. horrible acting. But again, like,
it's informational,
fascinating information about like our nation's history through the eyes of like food. And so it really is definitely worth a watch, but you will be laughing out loud because of the reenactments. It is just insane. The like, I would love to know what the like director's take is. Like, can you do that again? But like, really look like you're going to kill him right before you say franchise.
Yeah. Like, and like lower your eyebrows and like make it look a little bit creepy. But yeah, no, if you're a foodie, the food that built America is like a really, it's a good watch. I think one of my most interesting facts that I learned from it is McDonald's response to the Whopper. So like Burger King and McDonald's like started to compete. McDonald's always had like the reign, but the Burger King had like a significant burger, the Whopper, that came out. And McDonald's response to that wasn't Big Mac initially. It was the fish sandwich. Yeah. That is mind-blowing to me.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Because, yeah, like, what really put Burger King on the map was that they were willing to create a bigger burger. Like, that's what helped their local stores in Florida. They were concentrated in Florida. Like, boom, is because they were offering a larger and, like, a signature-named burger of the Whopper.
Yeah.
But, like, McDonald's, like, what's his name?
Ray Kroc.
Instead of, like, just deciding we're also going to have a signature burger, he, like, puts it out to his franchise owners and says, help me create like a signature item for McDonald's. Like, how can we be more inventive? Like, how can we create something that's more impactful? And it was, I believe, somebody out of New York that noticed a decline in their beef sales because Catholics were not consuming.
Oh, was it like Midwest somewhere?
Oh, was it in the Midwest?
I don't know. So yeah.
Well, they like it was a certain region of the country that they were noticing that like their neighborhoods were dominant, like were predominantly Catholic, and so they were seeing a decline in beef sales, like on the weekends. I think specifically, that like at the time it was more popular for Catholics to not consume red meat at like on this specific date. I really apologize for any listeners that are just like rolling their eyes at my incompetence at this knowledge, but so he noticed that, and he discovered like it was a franchise owner that created the fish fillet sandwich and brought it to Ray Kroc, and they were like, yes, like this is gonna help us compete like with the Whopper, which is so fascinating. And it wasn't until years later, I think almost close to a decade later,
yeah, it was a decade,
the Whopper came out, that they came out with the Big Mac, which was like revolutionary because it wasn't creating a new sandwich. It was literally just taking the same ingredients that they already had in on site and just stacking them higher.
Yep. Yep. And Ray Kroc wanted to name it the Blue Ribbon Burger, but the secretary was like, nah, let's name it Big Mac. And he was just like, yeah, that sounds right. Could you imagine the Blue Ribbon Burger? Any other fun facts from that show that you learned?
That
you thought was interesting.
There's a lot. I think it's mostly like the how the food industry really drove more technologies than we're aware of. There's like a lot of information about how like the need to develop like food safe practices, how to develop factories that could have air conditioning and that could have run on electricity. Like a lot of that was really the catalyst for actually bringing technology to a larger mass production, more like more of what we see common today was because of this, like, of these food products that were being created.
Didn't Heinz kind of start the FDA movement?
What was that? He was instrumental. Like, he and his son were instrumental in, like, helping to lobby for, like, more federal regulations for food safety. Uh-huh. So, yeah, that came from Heinz ketchup. Again, like, these are just, like, really small snippets. I'm probably really underserving these stories, but it's fascinating.
It is actually really fascinating. So, everybody, give the food that built America a watch. It's a good watch. Mm-hmm. It's like a perfect like Sunday kind of like nighttime watch. Just throw it on.
Yeah.
And you know, eat some pizza while you're watching it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's Audible here. We are big fans of Audible. We'll do a Haunted Mansion review, and then we'll talk about some anticipated movies to end the year. Okay. Haunted Mansion, the 2023 version, is directed by Justin Simien. It stars Lakeith Stanfield, Rosario Dawson, Owen Wilson, Tiffany Haddish, Danny DeVito, and Jeremy Lee Curtis. So, pretty stacked cast. And Chase Dillon and Jared Leto. And is written by Katie Dippold?
Yeah, Dippold of Parks and Rec fame. She came up on Parks and Rec as a writer there, so.
It definitely has some like Parks and Rec jokes sometimes with certain
certain delivery.
Yeah, certain delivery.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a single mom named Gabby hires a tour guide, a psychic, a priest, and a historian to help exorcise her newly bought mansion after discovering it is inhabited by ghosts. So that is the gist of Haunted Mansion. Kennedy, what did you think about Haunted Mansion?
Okay, I love the 2003 one very much.
I agree.
I think it's a fantastic film. I know it did not perform well at the box
office. I don't understand those reviews.
So I was like a little bit like cautious going into this because I was one that like I liked the 2003 version, wasn't screaming for like a new reboot of it.
Sure.
But here we are, you know? So like very open-minded going into
past 3 years have been reboots.
So
the reboot era.
With all that said, I think that it is very sweet. I think that it's fun. It's a lot more, it's a lot darker than the first one. It's not family friendly. Like when I say darker, I don't think it's more mature. I think that it just is like the visuals in it, some of the themes that are running through like the film.
Yeah.
Are a little bit more, yeah, I guess like a little bit more mature, but like not in the, I don't know, like not in an adult sense. It's still very family friendly.
Sure. Yeah. Overall, I thought it was, I still don't understand why this is not an October theater release, but again, they're probably going to drop it on Disney Plus like first week of October. So I get that. But if they wanted to have a better box office performance, I still am like not convinced that they would have had a lesser performance had they not dropped this first week of October. Anyways, that's my side rant. But overall, I think the film it's fine. Like, it has some really good jokes and delivery, especially by Owen Wilson and Danny DeVito. I like the Lakeith Stanfield perspective that he's kind of grieving. He's kind of stubborn about believing in ghosts. Even though he becomes a new tour guide after the events with what happens with his wife and everything. So I like that aspect. I am going to compare it to the original one because it has the same title. It's the same concept. It just didn't have like the same mystery component. And I love Eddie Murphy so much in that first Haunted Mansion and kind of the charm of that first Haunted Mansion. This one was a little bit more, I felt like, bland of missing that kind of same charm from the first Haunted Mansion. And I think that's, I will admit it, that is nostalgia. Nostalgia is a powerful drug, and the first Haunted Mansion is nostalgic for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think watching that as a kid, you're always much more entertained. You like any plot twists in it, you're just like, what? Whoa. Like, how did that happen? But I think that like in comparison to the 2003 one, I think that that movie does a little bit better of holding the mystery a little bit longer until the third act. And then you start to get a lot of the unfolding of like, what is this house? Who are these people? Who are these ghosts? Why are these crazy things happening in this house, right? Like, what is the origin story kind of behind it? Kind of is all like really building in that third act. In this one, like pretty much in the second act, you understand who the villain is.
Yeah.
You understand what his angle is, what his motives are, that he's that Jared Leto is the Hatbox ghost, that he's trying to collect these thousand souls to gain ultimate power. So then in the third act, it's not so much of a reveal, it's just the action of like defeating him, which is fun and which is exciting. I think that this film, for anybody that is a massive fan of the ride, like you are going to be overwhelmed with the amount of like
Easter eggs
and like little clues. It really is basically like it's like you're riding the ride. There are so many details that you will notice from the ride to the film, like to the screen, that make it feel like you're actually inside the Haunted Mansion and that you are watching an action movie unfold as if you were on the ride watching it happen, because they pay so much attention to the details of the house. And then also they really take a lot of like their whole plot, the whole story, the whole villain arc is based around obviously the characters that you see in the ride. So it just really does feel like you're very much in the ride, which is fun. I think that that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I do think that where it like, again, with like, you already understand this villain in the second act, it's not necessarily as fun or as of a reveal as the 2003 one, where you get a lot of that happening in the third act space.
But I will say that the cast like really like jived well. I thought that they really did have good chemistry. That's something that I feel like a lot of people have been able to like comment on, is that like for having such an eclectic kind of like random cast of characters, like they are very cohesive and like fun together, which is great. But I also think that they are, I also could see, could kind of sense where, like, I mean, are we going to talk about the product placement? Like,
is that Oh, yeah. Let's go there.
Oh, my goodness. Like, it was insane to see how many product placement ads were in this film.
Oh, my gosh. Let's list them.
Yes. Okay, wait. Did we list them? Like, where's the...
Where's your phone? It's
right here. Okay, yeah. I had them written down.
Yeah, so. It had, like, a... I don't know. It had, like, a lot of forced product placement jokes that didn't land, but... I will say there were a couple of jokes that actually had you and I, we were belly laughing.
Yes.
There was a couple. We won't say those jokes and what they were because we don't want to, you know, take away from the experience, but you may not laugh at the jokes that we were laughing at.
So like where I felt like that there was a disconnect as far as like cast chemistry or even in the storyline is every time they have one of these product placement ads, it feels so disingenuous.
Yeah.
And it just feels like you could hear a cash register like going off in the background, like
for sure.
Just something like every time. So we counted 11. If you go see the film and you count more, please like let us know in the comments or on Instagram. But we saw Zillow, Yankee Candle, Amazon, Burger King, Costco, Baskin Robbins, CVS, Zatarain's spice seasoning, Monopoly, The Deadliest Catch, and the Black Panther. So that's 11 in total that we caught that are just very obvious product placement moments that are so distracting. They are because like it really is so much of a name drop that you're like, wait, we were just talking about the main character's deceased wife and we got two product placements simultaneously in that scene. And you're like,
oh, it was like, Baskin Robbins and what else? What was the other one?
It's when they then, and I guess it's in the very next scene that they then you see them with the Burger King, like,
Burger King tater tots thing.
So it's just like, it is so jarring that it is a little bit like, whoa, like, okay, we all know about product placement. We all know that companies are paying for a part in this movie.
Yeah.
And because we know that, it's not like we're in the 1980s where it's the first time that we're seeing, like, you know, a soda pop ad, on screen, and then we're all just memorized and want to go do that. We all recognize that, like, when Amazon is name dropped in a movie, that, like, they paid a big top dollar for that. So it just feels very distracting.
Yeah. I wonder, like, how much did they pay to be name dropped?
Do you think they were paid to be name dropped, or was it just like, let's put this in as a joke?
I mean, I would imagine a lot of it is like payments and like contracts. And then also probably some of it is like, I don't know how many of these are internally connected through parent companies that it's sure. Like, if you get one, you get like five. You know? So it's like, I have no idea.
Very weird. Anyways, weird movie morsel that I want to bring up. What's your grade for Haunted Mansion? Any other things that you want to say about it?
I'd say B- sweet for my grade for Haunted Mansion. In comparison to like the 2003 one, I would say that's like a B+ sweet.
Okay.
So. I would give the 2023 Haunted Mansion a C, but it's still sweet. I think this is like a really fun watch that you can watch during Halloween times with family, friends, all that stuff. A little bland at times, and just some of the jokes don't land, but the jokes that do land are really fun. I thought the cast was a blast. Just was a little bit bland in some moments and throughout the story. So that gets a C-suite. I'd say the Haunted Mansion 2003 would probably be like a B-suite for me. But like that's like a... That B is like... That's a special B. it's a higher B.
Wait, because of nostalgia?
Because of nostalgia.
Okay.
But it's still like a fun watch. And it's a buck and a half. Are you kidding me? But anyways, the director for The Haunted Mansion from 2003 also directed The Lion King. I did not know that.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
I had no idea.
Yeah, so there's your movie morsel today. So everybody go watch Haunted Mansion. I think it's a great $5 Tuesday watch. Or honestly, wait till it drops on Disney Plus. First week in October, which I'm sure that is when it will drop. So, moving on. Oh, another thing I want to say. This is the lowest opening box office weekend. It dropped $24.1 million for a theme park movie since the OG Haunted Mansion.
Wow.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? So
okay, was it you that was telling me that they wanted to try and create sequels, or that they were trying to create a more substantial like story arc for future films?
I'm not sure. I don't think that was me.
Okay.
Maybe that wasn't me.
Okay. Because I feel like I had heard that somewhere before going into this movie, and I don't think that they were setting that up for more. Mm. I didn't get a sense at the end that they were trying to do more with this franchise.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. Like, the box hat, it's like, what happened when he gets 1,000? It never said, like...
what the stakes were.
What the stakes were. It was just like, you can't let him get 1,000. So that was kind of like, that feels like a little bit of a plot hole. Maybe it did, and it just went way over my head.
Yeah, I agree. But I like my last thought on the Haunted Mansion was really that, like Disney has like a tremendous responsibility to endear their audience, like to their theme parks. And like Haunted Mansion is like a ride that is found in multiple theme parks. So it's in Disneyland, Disney World, it's in, Tokyo, and then as well as, Hong Kong. I couldn't remember. Maybe it's in Paris as well, but it is a major theme park ride for them. And so like to really endear their audience, like to their theme park ride, like has a pretty important like motive for them, because I would imagine that they would try to really, like since this is a ride, you're able to like, participate in Disney, like in the Disneyland and Disney World, like attractions and spaces, but also the merchandise that is sold off of this. Like, I would imagine that they have like a high like interest in really like making sure that generation after generation is always endeared to the Haunted Mansion. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, that does. What do you prefer? The regular Haunted Mansion ride or the Nightmare Before Christmas Haunted Mansion ride?
Ooh, okay. I personally love The Nightmare Before Christmas, so I think I would prefer that. But I still love the Haunted Mansion ride. Like, I'm not disappointed when it's not in the Nightmare Before Christmas state.
Yeah, I think I prefer the just regular OG Haunted Mansion.
Why?
I don't know. Because I love The Nightmare Before Christmas.
I'm going to convince you right here that it's better.
But I like just like the OG Haunted Mansion. Like when we went for Halloween, I think it should have just been the Haunted Mansion. But for Christmas, it should be Nightmare Before Christmas. That is my hot take. Controversial?
I think that's your take. Yeah.
That's why it's hot. Hot take there. Because it might not be accurate. But we're going to stick with it. I'd rather have the original Haunted Mansion. Okay. Ready for anticipated movies? I'm gonna just list these off, and I want to hear your what you're looking forward to. Okay, so we have so we're 7 months in to the year. We had Barbenheimer, that was huge. We've had some other big movies: John Wick Chapter 4, Spider-Verse, Mission Impossible, Air. What else did we have that has been a great watch, a big release? Can't think.
I think you got them.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm just read these off. I want to hear what your like top two are. We have The Creator, Killers of the Flower Moon, Dune Part 2, The Marvels, Hunger Games, Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. We have Next Goal Wins, Napoleon, Wish, Aquaman 2, Wonka, Ferrari, and The Color Purple.
From that list,
what are my most anticipated?
Yeah,
like films? Two or three.
I think that I'm very intrigued by Killers of the Flower Moon. I called that out already by seeing the trailer. That's one that I'm very excited about. I think also Dune is very high up there. But the one that like really feels on brand for me is Next Goal Wins with
Taika Waititi. Let's go.
I feel like that is very much so like my speed of movie, and I really enjoy a lot of his films, both the box office and his more smaller independent ones, or I don't even know if they're independent, but his a little bit smaller films. So I'm really intrigued and excited about that one. And then I think that the other one that just feels like the right time, the right place is Wonka, like coming out in December or like around the holiday time.
Perfect.
Even if it's not like an incredible movie, I think that just the whimsical, like the Christmas, the holiday season, I think is a really great time for movies. And it's like a really great time for families to go to the movies together. And so like, even if Wonka isn't like the most brilliant film, I think that it'll still be highly enjoyable.
Yeah. I think Wonka will be a top 10 box office for the year.
I'm very interested to know like how much of it is musical, because it felt like there were dance numbers, but yeah. we didn't hear a song like necessarily, and we didn't hear Timothy Chalamet sing in the trailer per se, like maybe a little bit of a sing-songy, but not necessarily like a full dance number. Like in my mind, I'm comparing it to Greatest Showman.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if it's that angle.
Yeah.
Oh, talk about a trailer, the A24 trailer. That did you see that new trailer? It's like a musical by The Greatest Showman. I'll have to show it to you afterwards.
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that looks like a really good time and very crude and over the top. I'll show it to you after this. Okay, I think mine is Dune Part 2. Clearly, that's my number one. Killers of the Flower Moon. I'm gonna be real here. I am very interested to see what Aquaman 2 looks like, because they've had reshoots, they've had like that date pushback. I really want to see this puppy on screen and see how it unfolds. So that is like anticipated to me, to see if it is just an absolute disaster or if it's a little bit coherent.
Is that under the direction of James Gunn, or is this outside of that?
This is outside.
So this is pre-James Gunn.
So what is that like? Does that mean that it's not canon? Like, what does this mean?
It just means they're dropping and that's it.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a one-off film and we're just going to go with it. Like
similar to The Flash.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, The Flash, like, was really good. And, like, maybe because it was just, like, hanging out, like, on its own ledge.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe the expectations were low.
Maybe we'll have a similar experience with Aquaman 2, because the first one was really rough.
The first Aquaman?
Yeah.
I agree. I didn't
love the first Aquaman. Yeah, that was very mid and fine.
Okay. All right, let's round it up. I saw this on Instagram. We're going to play a little this or that.
Okay.
Is that okay? Mm-hmm. So you say whatever one you prefer. We'll just be quick here. Okay, beach or mountains?
Beach.
Coke or Diet Coke?
Diet Coke.
Chicken fingers or burger?
Burger.
Office, The Office or Parks and Rec?
The Office.
Basketball or football?
Basketball.
Tennis or pickleball?
Tennis.
Nadal or Federer?
Federer.
Serena or Billie Jean King?
Ooh, those are really, like, wow, those are such interesting comparisons, I guess. I'm going to say Serena, because Serena I watched in, like, my high school years, so.
MJ or LeBron?
MJ.
Brownie or cookie?
Brownie.
Voldemort or Sauron?
Voldemort.
Steve-O or Steven?
Steve-O? I apologize if that's right or wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Perfect answer. Movies or TV shows?
TV shows.
Crunchy peanut butter or smooth?
Crunchy.
Reese's or Kit Kat?
Kit Kat.
Kit Kat is a great movie theater candy. I love it. Disneyland or Disney World?
Disney World.
Nice. Okay, that is this or that. Anything else before we round out and close it up?
No, I don't think so. I think that's all my takes. I hope they've been moderately interesting. Oh, you got to give your shout out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me. So yeah, Kennedy and I were at a Powder League basketball game, and we were there just supporting some people that also work at Lace 'Em Up. It's like a pro amateur league. So Kennedy and I we sit down. And this girl comes behind me. She's like, "Hey, are you TC?" And I'm like, "Yes." And she's like, "I listen to your podcast." And I'm like, "Wait, what?" I was like, "That is so flattering." So shout out Hannah for saying hello. Yeah, that was a really cool moment. It was just kind of like, you know, we have people that listen to the pod. So very cool. Very cool. But I was really confused because I have TC LeBaron _LEU for my Lace 'Em Up basketball account. So there's a couple of people that do call me TC in the basketball world, but there's literally, I can count on one hand. So I thought it was like a relation to that. So I was really confused at first, but yeah, a listener of the pod, very small world.
Yeah. Very exciting. Very nice to meet you, Hannah. Thank you for coming up and saying hi. Very, very kind of you. So
we love the fans and all the listeners. Thank you for listening. Kennedy, great having you on. We'll see you on again for, I don't know when the next collab will be. Maybe another Halloween fall watch. Maybe Hunger Games. That's maybe what we'll review all together.
Ooh, So I just come on for like the mid angsty, the mid-2000s angsty film watches.
Yeah, it's a lot to talk about.
They're fun.
Okay. Well, everybody enjoy Keeks's take for Disney World and stay sweet. Sweet.
Thanks for turning it over to Keeks and Becky. TC and Kennedy, thank you for the great take, wonderful take. We started recording a little bit from our Disney World trip, and honestly, we were having so much fun, and we kept going around with my family that we rode the wave and spent time with the family, and it was a great time. Today is our last day. We're doing Epcot today, and our favorite ride is there, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy Cosmic Rewind. Now, Becky, what has been your favorite part of the trip?
I know that this is going to sound really cheesy, maybe. I don't know. But on the second day at Hollywood Studios, Kiko got to make a lightsaber. And it was something that, like, he's been looking forward to for a long time. And it was for his birthday. Like, so it was kind of like, this is the perfect, you know, little special occasion, whatever. I had slept in that day and didn't go with the rest of the family because I wanted to sleep. But then I needed to make it in time. And so I literally was that person sprinting to the shuttle to get to the park, and then sprinting from the shuttle to the opening, and then sprinting from the park entrance all the way to the very back of the park to get to the lightsaber in time so that I could be there with Kiko. But honestly, it was the most incredible time being there and watching his cute little like inner child just be in awe. And it was great pageantry. Like, they did so many cool effects with like lighting and sound, and the actors were really great, and the lightsaber was hefty. So overall, like, it was just really, really cute to get to watch Kiko like do all of that.
Yeah, I would also agree that that is my favorite part. I know, and I'm very aware that Star Wars is not a real thing that we know of, because it's a long time ago and it was a galaxy far, far away. So, you know, who knows, a big, what's it called? Black hole could have like destroyed all of it, and we would have never known.
Only
because
George Lucas knew the history.
Exactly, and he received it in a vision.
Yeah.
So, all that being said, there's a moment where it's kind of like, close your eyes and put your hand over your lightsaber, which I did. And I am not going to deny that I'm like, no, I think I get this whole Force thing. I could have it. I just haven't awakened it yet. And maybe with training, I have it. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. 100%. I have an actual video of him when he closed his eyes, put his hand over the lightsaber.
Oh, shut up. Did you really?
I do. Yeah. And it lights up for the first time. Like, I have it on video.
That's when it is.
Yeah. And it's like, you could tell that like you were very like enthralled in that moment.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, like it's hefty. I got the elemental nature handle. They like let you, you know, you walk in and they let you pick which handle you want, and I immediately kind of thought, I was like, ooh, the Sith one looks cool. But then I got the elemental one, I'm like, no, this one feels like it. And I picked green as being my color. And then after I saw my family again, my sisters were like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. Your lightsaber at home that you've had since you were a child is green. And I did not even think about that when I picked green. I was just like, oh, green seems like a cool color. So, yeah, you know, the Force as we see it, we might not think it's real, but it's definitely real. So that was the best part about it. The trip has been great. It's been a great time celebrating my birthday and being with my family. So we will see y'all next week for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And anything else. We went and saw Oppenheimer in 70mm today, so we've seen it 3 times now, and it's the best is in 70mm. Like, the best is on film. I mean, you know, I feel like that goes without being said. Film really brings out the color, and the black and white felt like a totally different movie. It didn't even look like, you know, the digital IMAX that we've been seeing it on.
Yeah.
The sound is not as like glaring, but it also feels like it's easier to hear.
Yeah.
So that was our experience. That's been a great time. Becky, thanks for chiming in really, really quick. And everyone, stay so sweet.
Stay sweet. Sweet.